Welcome to Heel to Heel Radio. I am your hostess, Elizabeth Gordon. Today's show is sponsored by Flourishing Business, the advisory firm for entrepreneurs. And today on Heel to Heel, we have a fantastic show for you. As always, I'm going to go ahead and introduce you to my two sensational guests, Susan Hitchcock and Liz Rowling from TurkNet Leadership Group. First up, Susan Hitchcock, who has been involved with TurkNet Leadership Group for quite a while now. Susan is a champion of women in leadership and an advocate for parity in the workforce. She's also a mentor, researcher, speaker, and career consultant. And to encourage and support the next generation of women leaders, Susan created The Age of Sheroes, which is a collection of profiles about women of achievement, and we are going to get into some of that today about what women are doing in business leadership roles and how that is impacting both the corporate arena as well as them personally. I am graced with in the studio today, Miss Liz Rowling, who has her PhD and is also a consultant and research associate with TurkNet Leadership Group. Liz graduated from the University of Georgia's Industrial and Organizational Psychology program with a BS in psychology and also an MS in Industrial and Organizational Psychology from the University of Georgia. She's currently a consultant and research associate at TurkNet Leadership Group and has extensive experience in a variety of industrial and organizational consulting arenas. She's got experience working with leadership coaching, developing and conducting structural behavior interviews, as well as validating selection systems, creating performance management systems, and also survey development, report development, and data analysis. As part of her doctoral education, Liz successfully completed courses in industrial and organizational psychology, management, and human resources and organizational development. We're going to talk a little bit more about this dissertation and some of the research involved. So, ladies, welcome to the Heel to Heel show. I'm so thrilled to have both of you with me today. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
This is terrific, Elizabeth.
So, Susan, I'd like to start with you and talk a little bit about, you've had a very long, successful career working for and with a variety of quite prominent corporations and organizations. Talk about some of the changes that you've witnessed during this time as it relates to women in the workforce specifically.
All right. Well, I definitely cover a lot of years and do have a lot of experience that I like to just say that, you know, back in the ages when I started, including the 70s and so forth, if I juxtapose that to today, it does seem like, quote unquote, we've come a long way. For example, entering the workforce, the workplace early on in my career, it was very obvious that the entry for women into management was really very limited. As a matter of fact, early on, things like the EEOC literally had to put quotas in place to help companies to open up from a diverse from a diversity standpoint. And of course, that was both for gender as well as ethnic purposes. We had zero to few women in the executive suite. Therefore, we had very limited examples of female, strong female leadership role models that we could look up to. And something that is really abhorrent to me today to think back on is that we, some of us early on, were actually told that we were competing with each other for upward mobility. And that was a small group of women who some of us were told we were being looked at for higher levels of management. However, we had to sort of outperform the other women. Now, as you can imagine, that didn't necessarily set up the right kind of scenario for women at that point to be very supportive of one another. We were definitely competing and keeping all of our information to ourselves. So in those same years, there really were no so-called support groups, certainly no internal and very few external networks for women. I'm really happy to say things did change, start to change quite a bit from the 80s on, and things became more open for women. And certainly one of the things I think that you notice, and I noticed when I left the corporate world, was the women's entrepreneurial movement took place. Now, some of that was just innovative women who had the desire to go into business. And frankly, some of that was because women exited the corporate world when they looked up and didn't think that there was very much opportunity or potential. Fortunately, that that has changed. But of course, we're at 50% or so of the workforce now and about that in the management ranks, but still have a long way to go to have the right proportions, I think, of women in senior management and on boards, for that matter, where we're still in the 16-17% range. And that not only, by the way, is, you know, a national statistic, but that's also the way it is in Georgia. And for companies that are not the large companies, the percentage is even smaller of women in those senior levels. But a lot of positives have happened. Certainly, I think women have influenced the types of leadership styles, if you will, that you see in the workplace, because I can assure you it was extremely male-dominated when I started. The so-called autocratic style of leadership was pretty much the way to go, and if that didn't fit your style, you pretty much needed to try to figure out how to make it fit. Fortunately, I think women did bring a lot to the table, the more collaborative style, which now is becoming very much touted as the style of leadership, certainly one that is referenced in a lot of the current leadership books and so forth.
Right, it's fascinating to see
a lot of
how
influence, I think, and obviously we've had tremendous growth in women's networks and organizations.
I think it's fascinating to see how. I mean, as much as we can look at the situation now and say there should be more gender parity in the higher executive levels and in the boardroom, it has changed dramatically, like you said, in, you know, a relatively short time, if we say the last, you know, 30 to 50 years in terms of what the corporate landscape has looked like. And I think it's attributed to the fact that women are making a difference in the business, right? Maybe initially corporations said, well, we've got to let more women in because, you know, it's the right thing to do, but very quickly started to see the impact economically of that, and business rewards economic success, right? If you can create more profitability in the corporation, it's always a good thing. So what would you think, Susan, were some of the changes that went on internally as companies looked at the dynamics of women leaders and said, well, you know what, actually, they're not going to be best performing when we set them up in a very competitive style. It actually makes more sense to create more of a collaborative environment. That's how you're going to get more performance out of these women and actually allow them to impact the bottom line and the success of the business in a more successful manner.
One of the things certainly that began to happen, and I was the beneficiary of that very much so, was doors were open to women in parts of the company where we typically had not been in great numbers, and that would be more so in, say, the more technical areas, and that certainly was what happened in my case. And as those doors were open so that women like myself could go from what had been a traditionally woman-only type management role to a role where we were probably managing mostly other men and had mostly men as our peers, and most importantly, had line management responsibilities. That is, we had operations. We were in there with all the other, if you will, boys who had to deliver the results. And if you could deliver the results, and if you could lead a team effectively, develop people and lead a team effectively, it began to not matter really what your gender was. And in fact, some of us were being looked at as some of the best examples of leadership because we were accomplishing both of those objectives of getting good results, excellent results, and having really strong feedback, positive feedback, people who wanted to work for us. That was there's no question in my mind that as some of that began to happen, we began to get more promotional opportunities.
Now, Liz, you come at this topic from a slightly different perspective, having entered the workforce a little bit more recently, and actually did your dissertation on the topic of internal women's networks. So what, first of all, got you interested in this topic, and what were some of the findings?
Well, I've been interested in women's leadership development in general for a while now. I guess in college is when I really became interested, because I think that before I took a certain sociology class, I thought that this was sort of a problem that had been solved already. And I found out that it wasn't, although, as Susan said, we have come a long way, but there were still there's still room for growth in that area. And so what I originally set out to study was women's leadership development programs, and found that there really weren't very many women-specific programs out there. And what organizations were doing, though, were these internal women's networks. And so I started wondering, well, what are these and how exactly are they benefiting the women who participate? And I found that there wasn't very much research on it. And so that's sort of what...
Perfect topic to dive into. So
exactly.
Tell us, what are women's internal networks or women affinity groups? There's a couple of different terms for them, but
yes,
what exactly does that mean?
Yes, women's affinity groups is another term for internal women's networks. And what they are internal groups that put together programs for women to, I think the general goal is usually to provide opportunity to network with one another, and also to provide career development support, just generally sometimes management development type activities. But really what I saw more of was the social aspect.
Okay. The ability to network and get to know other peers that are also climbing the corporate ladder, if you will, and network with them.
Exactly. Specific activities around networking.
So, Susan, why is that so important to provide a forum, a more formalized network for women to get to know other women in leadership positions?
Well, first of all, it matches what men have always had. So when we didn't get together and share our experiences, and that includes what we've learned from the daily ups and downs of being in the business world, we didn't get together and share that, or even our own struggles and experience as women who have, we all, men and women, have a lot more going on than just what we do in the workplace. There's the whole personal life, there's the family life and all of that. So being able as professional women to share your experiences and to share some of what you've learned, lessons learned along the way, is what is, again, what men have always done, and also it's very encouraging. I cannot tell you how many times people have said to me, both in some of the writing that I've done, which, again, back to talking about some of my sheroes, just telling about their life stories, career and life stories, and then having women come and speak at our monthly women's leadership group. Women really benefit from hearing those stories, the real life stories of other women. And they look up to women who are both at their level and above and say, well, gosh, if she can do it, I can do it. And I think that general, that it increases the confidence level of the whole group, to be totally honest.
Right. Well, Liz, what were some of the main findings from your research? And, you know, what were some of the things you maybe expected to see? Or were there some surprises that came up along the way? What were the big highlights?
One of the biggest things that came out of my research that was a surprise was that by participating, or I guess it wasn't a surprise that I found this, but that it was as strong as it was, that the effect was as strong as it was, that by participating in the social activities provided by the Women's Network, the women felt that they had more supportive networks of relationships within the organization. So not necessarily just with people participating in the network, but their personal network had expanded, and they found it to be more supportive. So they felt like there were more people that they had relationships with that wanted to see them succeed and wanted to help them succeed. So it might not sound surprising, but the strength of the effect was surprising. And the other thing that was surprising was that the social activities were more strongly related to what I called utility reactions. So how beneficial and useful did women see the Women's Network as being? The social activities were more strongly related to that than were management development type activities provided by the network.
Interesting. But now, were the objectives from the group linked to anything as it relates to corporate objectives in terms of putting a certain amount of people in leadership positions or reaching certain competency levels in different areas? Were there specific objectives that the company said, we're forming this network and the reason why we're doing it is XYZ?
There's a lot of variance in how strongly supportive or how supportive the organizations are of their internal women's networks. And so some organizations very clearly lay out what the objectives are, while other organizations sort of let it happen.
Okay, a little bit more laissez-faire attitude there.
Or a little bit more member-driven, a little bit more organic.
Okay.
Elizabeth, may I make a comment on that?
Yeah, please do.
If I could just, and I'll mention it, one example. An organization like KPMG and the second one, Ernst & Young, actually are two outstanding ones, set about a number of years ago in their creation and support of internal women's network, they literally said, look, we're losing women at an increasing and an alarming rate. We cannot retain them. What is the problem? We can't move them up because we can't keep them. And they set such very specific goals tied to what would be considered as part of their business goals of the corporation, led by the very senior levels in the company. And they track this year over year. And you know, I'm sure, some of the results as well as I do. Those kinds of and those were some of the big accounting firms, but they have had very good results in over the last several years in their retention rates and in moving more women up to the partner roles and in providing a little bit more flexible workplace so that the women who had families weren't working 80 or 100 hours a week constantly and could do some of their work perhaps in a different mode. But I personally, I guess if I have anything to quarrel with some of the women's networks, it would be, I think that it would be great if some of them had a little bit more structure in terms of how the company could benefit. But as Liz said, some are definitely more organic. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but I really appreciate some of the organizations that have set some very specific goals, which have in turn helped the corporation.
Right. I mean, the examples that you gave, those are companies that, yes, came out of what was traditionally a very male-dominated field. And there's a lot of industries out there that are traditionally very male-dominated. And by creating that as such a prominent objective that kind of infiltrated all their other strategic priorities, have built great reputations in the marketplace. And
yes.
Been able to retain top talent, which is a big deal. What are some of the other outcomes that a company can look at and say, this is why? I mean, we all know that it's a good thing to have more women in leadership roles, but why is it so important for a company when they look at their strategic positioning in the marketplace or their overall company goals? Why is it important for them? And what are the benefits they derive or can derive out of a well-run women's network? I'll let both of you talk about that.
Well, I'll be quick. Two things. One, the financial results, and you know the statistic well. It is not debatable. It is a fact that in studies over a number of years of top corporations, those companies that have the most women in their senior ranks have a 35 to 36 somewhere in there percent higher return on investment. Now, that is bottom line, why you're in business, et cetera. So that kind of data, once people are paying attention to it, would certainly say that companies would benefit from having a larger number of women in their in the management roles, particularly in senior levels. And secondly, today's world, marketing is so important, and you have your customer base almost in just about any industry you want to mention, you know, needs to be able to attract women, and in some cases those women are your top customers, but you should be able to reflect internal what's going on with your external marketplace. So I think advertising, marketing, and then the pure financial results are two good reasons.
Absolutely. I would agree. I mean, there's such transparency today in the marketplace. Customers know what's going on internally in the company and are going to link what your internal corporate practices are to everything they relate to your entire brand image and make purchasing decisions accordingly. Liz, why do you think some of the companies have decided this is really something worth investing in and worth exploring and really building out within our company?
Well, I would second what Susan said. That was exactly what came to mind when you first asked the question. Another thing I would add and just reiterate is women and men enter the workforce in about the same numbers, and organizations are putting a tremendous amount of training and spending money on onboarding all of these employees. And so if they're not retaining them at the same level, then they're wasting their resources. And so they need to be able to be sure to promote them and retain them at the same level. And I also would add to the part about marketing that, and I believe one of you might have mentioned this, that women make the majority of buying decisions in families. So
right, 80% the numbers say. So, I mean, you can't afford to ignore that amount of purchasing power.
Exactly.
Now, what about mentorship? Because part of what I think women get out of these networks is the idea of having, whether it be a formal or an informal mentor within the company. And Susan, you mentioned that back in the days when there weren't very many women leaders, obviously it was hard to find a woman leader mentor out there. What has been shown about the impact of having a mentor in one's career, whether it be a female or a male mentor?
Well, first of all, that's a very important point, that women shouldn't get hung up on just having female mentors, but whether that's formally or informally, because we all need, at various stages of our careers, we need mentors of all types, and sometimes they're peers. They're not always superiors in the workforce. So, but I can tell you that it makes a huge amount of difference. I think any woman that I know that's successful, I don't know any who can't cite at least one or two or three or four key people who along the way were either formal or informal mentors. Now, there's a big difference in mentor and sponsors, and I have to say that I think women are probably doing a better job getting more mentorship. I'm not sure that women have as many sponsors as men still do. And a sponsor is literally someone who gets involved in your career and says, I'm going to sort of guide you and speak, in effect, sort of speak for you when there's succession planning going on and that kind of thing. And there has been plenty of that going on for men for many years. And I think there's some of that going, I know there's some of that going on for women as well, but mentoring can be really important, and it certainly is, it's there a lot of times it's there for the asking. You get, some people say, you know, well, I can get mentored over a lunch, and that may be a one-time thing, and I agree with that. Mentoring can be defined in a lot of different ways.
And Liz, what about the asking? Because sometimes that is the part that, women have a hard time with, the idea of asking for help, asking for the promotion, asking for the raise. What can be done to kind of strengthen that asking muscle in terms of helping them to get those opportunities that are available now that there are these leadership networks?
It's interesting that you mentioned that. Susan, in fact, often mentions a book called Women Don't Ask, and it's about the fact that women just sometimes don't even think to ask, whereas men might not even hesitate. And certainly men are sometimes, you know, just as hesitant, but in general, women tend to be much more hesitant about asking for things. And I think to just know that, that it's okay to ask. And the other thing is women tend to doubt themselves to a much greater degree. And we see self-confidence scores lower for women all the time. And it usually has nothing to do with their level of ability. So I think it's important for women to know that.
Absolutely. I mean, some of this stuff comes from, ways that we're socialized from a very young age. And it only starts to become apparent, once you're mid-career, and suddenly some of the things that you kind of took for granted now can hinder your progress in the workforce. So in addition to what companies are doing to help promote more women leaders, what do women need to be aware of from a self-awareness standpoint, things that they might be doing that are hindering their success or their further promotions up the ranks? Anything come to mind?
Several things. Women need to be willing to take risk more. A lot of senior level women say that they've taken calculated risk along the way. A lot of us would say, well, I want to see all the I's dotted and T's crossed and then I'll do something. But in fact, to really move forward, you need to be willing to take some risk. And also, I think communication style is something that I want to just mention. I think women and men have a different communication style in many instances. And I think one of my favorite books, current books, is Shanti Feldhahn's The Male Factor. In it, she talks about the perceptions that men have of women. And it's not about whether they're right or wrong. It's about what they are. And if they are what they are, then women can at least be aware of it and think about whether or not they want to address it in some form or fashion. And one of the things is that we, women in general, often, I think, confuse men by some of the things that we say or how we say them. So learning to be, more succinct, learning to be having all of your being prepared, extremely well prepared, is something that I think really all of us can do. And it certainly is one of those traits that is very characteristic of women at senior levels. They're very articulate. They can express their case, get to the point, et cetera.
Liz, in your research, did you find that these internal women's networks were successful at helping women kind of learn the rules of the corporate game or get better at sort of playing that game?
I think so. Maybe not directly. More the supportive relationships that were found were more around people helping women learn some of those rules and things like that. So finding those supportive relationships and those developmental relationships that would help understand the unwritten rules.
Okay. Now, we are almost out of time, ladies, and I know I could just keep you here all day long and talk about this fascinating topic, but I want to, first of all, give you an opportunity to tell us a little bit more about TurkNet and the leadership methodology, because obviously this whole topic is something that dovetails very well with the overall TurkNet methodology. So touch on that for a moment, please, if you would.
Well, we are a full-service talent management firm, so we focus on anything to help organizations make their workforce as productive and also happy and healthy. We're probably most known for our leadership development work. We have been doing executive coaching for over 20 years, and so that the leadership methodology that you mentioned comes out of that, and we focus on a balance of respect and responsibility. So the relationship side of things and also the task-oriented side of things. And Susan, I'm sure you could tell a little bit more.
Well, and TurkNet's done a lot with, you know, investing in women leaders. Why, Susan, is it such an important part of the corporate philosophy for that the company to have done all of this work and invested in programming around women in leadership?
Well, I have to say that I started with TurkNet literally 18 years ago, and most of the clients that were coming in for executive development, executive coaching at the time, were men, I can tell you. And it certainly seemed very logical to me, coming from the corporate world and knowing what some of the needs were there, in terms of we had a lot of women in middle management who were sort of ready to move up, but needed some of that further development for the next level and the next level. So that was a time when TurkNet said, well, we can be very beneficial to companies by being a resource to help them develop that female talent pool. And I do believe that we have added very much to our business model by having that as one of our strengths. And definitely have worked with some of the top business owners in the state of Georgia, entrepreneurs that we've worked with, and many, many, many have great examples of corporate women that we've helped helped in their succession up the ladder. So it's been very important to us over the years, as has been, and I would like to just mention that one thing that is so distinguishable about TurkNet is Bob and Lynn TurkNet, Dr. Robert TurkNet and his wife, Lynn, of course, the principals, developed a model called the Leadership Character Model, and it's certainly not a woman's leadership model. It's simply a leadership model that has as its foundation integrity, and as Liz mentioned, there's sort of two sides to leadership development and that scale that we use to define the model, and one is the respect side, which we call the people side, the relationships that are so important for leaders, and the other side is just the task, what are you there to do, and the results, and so forth. And we get to recognize some outstanding leaders in the state of Georgia once a year, both business leaders, well, business leaders, nonprofit leaders, and educational leaders, based on nominees that come into us who are great models of great examples, rather, of that model. So we're excited. We've got another Leadership Character Awards program coming up September 22nd at the Georgia Aquarium. And this will be our eighth year, I believe, Liz. Is that right?
That sounds right.
That's very exciting. Now, as an advisory firm, when you're giving advice to companies, what would be some advice you would give a company on how they can achieve greater gender balance in some of the higher level positions and leverage some of their top female talent?
Well, two things that I would say would be, obviously, an internal women's network helps. Other things that have shown to be helpful are more flexibility, allowing more flexibility in work schedules and things like that. But another thing that we haven't talked about is objective promotion processes. So developing processes that will keep those decisions more objective rather than allowing bias and simply relationships to determine who will be promoted. I think that the more objective your processes are, the more likely you're going to see more balance in terms of men and women being promoted.
That's an interesting observation. Anything else you'd like to add, Susan?
I think that's a good a good summation. No question that the top companies for women, where women work and so forth, are very distinguishable by characteristics of inclusive cultures, and definitely where top leaders walk the talk in terms of wanting to have a diverse group of leaders. And it does flow down from that. It really does.
Well, now is time for our chic tip segment, ladies. So you've given a wealth of wonderful career advice within this program. But if you had to sum it all up into one super fabulous chic tip for women who are trying to achieve more success in their career, what chic tip would you offer them?
Mine would be to be authentic. I think you need to be comfortable with who you are. You certainly need to develop, but you need to be authentic in who you are. And authentic leadership is something now that is being touted by pretty much everybody.
That's a great one. Liz?
I agree, Susan. That's a very good one. I would also say that I think that women and even men sometimes do have a tendency to think that if they just keep their nose to the grindstone and work really hard, they'll be noticed. And that's not necessarily true. So I know it might seem a little bit repetitive, but networking and doing more than just focusing on getting your job done is really going to be necessary to moving to the next level.
Right. Those relationships and sometimes the after hours stuff or just knowing the right people and building relationships with them in the right way also makes a big difference in one's career. And great career advice from two very successful women here on Heel to Heel. Thanks again to our guests, Susan Hitchcock and Liz Rowling with TurkNet Leadership Group. You can find them both at turknet.com. And you can also hear this show again and get links to all of their information on our website, businessradiox.com. Thanks again to our sponsor, Flourishing Business, and we will talk to you where we'll have more Women Talking Business on Heel to Heel Radio next week at 1:30. I'll talk to you then.
Give on the business. Deal.